Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Petropolis Podcast. My guest today is Elizabeth Schutte. She is the CEO and founder. Are you the founder, Elizabeth?
No, President CEO. My husband, John Cutaselli, is the founder.
Okay. President CEO of ARC Pet.
ARC at JFK.
Are you only at JFK?
Yes, we are. Right now, we are only at JFK.
Us what ARC Pet at JFK is.
So the ARC at JFK is a animal health reception quarantine center. We opened on January 2nd, 2017. We replaced a much smaller and less focused facility that was there previously that was built in the 1950s by the Humane Society. But really what we do is provide a safe haven for animals that are traveling. This is a very common type of facility, often called a border inspection post in Europe and in other parts of the world. And it kind of serves two main purposes. One is enhancing the welfare of animals, making sure that they're properly cared for when they're traveling by air, especially in cargo. And secondly, it's to protect the public health of a country, because animals can carry diseases that are both zoonotic and that could be transmitted to other animals. So our facility provides that for all animals, including horses and small companion animals, dogs and cats, birds, specialty shipments of animals that are like zoo animals or livestock, pigs, those kinds of things. So we're there to support the airlines. We're there to support the owners of the animals and shippers of the animals, ground handlers at the airport. So handling animals is a very specific type of skill. And, you know, basically a lot of the different cohorts within the air aviation industry don't have that type of skill or training.
Was this business instigated by New York State, or was it something that you and your husband wanted to go into?
As animals travel more and more, and as the veterinary field becomes more sophisticated in terms of animal needs and animal diseases, there's been a growing recognition that at every major port of entry, there needs to be this type of facility. So when JFK was putting together its redevelopment plan, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, who operates JFK Airport, put out a request for information, request for proposal to kind of identify what were the needs. And a gentleman from Cornell University, a veterinarian, had seen it and was very interested in this aspect of animal care. So he was interested, but the construction of the facility, the operation of the facility, was something that he really wasn't familiar with. He's familiar with animals, not with aviation. So he partnered with my husband, who has a background in real estate and finance, and they developed this whole concept and actually ended up being the winning proposal for the construction and operation of the ARC.
What percentage of the animals that you're transporting, I guess, importing and exporting, is that what it
yes,
would
be? Yes.
What percentage are household pets, your general pets at home, and what percentage are farm animals? I know horses are a big deal with you guys. You have a whole horse segment, and there's a quarantine aspect that comes with horses.
We assist with the transportation of farm animals. We're not generally handling them in terms of getting them out of their pens and feeding them. They arrive in a pen and we would provide food and water. And we also provide assistance with making sure they're loaded properly or taken off the on and off the aircraft properly. Because, you know, getting that size of an animal onto an aircraft requires a lift and you don't want to disturb the animals in any way. So that's how we interact on the farm animals. But to answer your question, in terms of dollar volume, we're about 40% small animals and 60% in the equine world. It's growing. I would say we're going to be close to 50-50 soon. In terms of numbers, I would say we have more small animals than we do horses. We're somewhere around 5,000 horses a year and probably closer to 10,000 plus on the small animals.
Who uses your services when it comes to the small animals, your family pet? Why is it an expensive process? Can your average person, middle class person, afford this kind of service?
That's a great question. And so when you think about why do animals move, why do animals have to be moved? Of course, there's commercial purposes. They're being moved for sale. There's working dogs. But I would say the majority, I couldn't put an exact percentage on it, are being moved because of relocation. So somebody's got a job that they're moving for. They're moving their family somewhere. They're a military. So that's the majority of pet moves, especially when you look at animals that are in the cargo hold of an aircraft. All right. So you're probably, or most people are familiar, if they fly, they see animals coming on the airplane in the passenger area. That's not typically something that we work with that much. That's completely the responsibility of the passenger, and that dog or cat has to be small enough to fit underneath the seat. Or there's the service animal aspect of that, which is a whole separate topic.
Are we talking about real service animals, or the?
Yes, exactly. And then then you can also check your animal as excess baggage, which means basically you're checking a dog or cat in a travel container that has to be approved by the airline, and that can be checked into the baggage hold, and only certain airlines have the right type of baggage hold that can accept those. But basically that animal is checked as excess baggage. It'll come out on the baggage claim area when you arrive at your destination. That has its...
I find that nauseating.
Yeah, yeah.
I find that they're transporting living beings with baggage. And
it's a little scary. The biggest concern is what happens in an emergency, or, if your trip has one or two stops, what happens if that baggage doesn't make the next flight? So there are concerns with the excess baggage. What the ARC deals with primarily are animals that are in cargo. And we work with them.
Can you tell me what the difference is?
Cargo means that those animals are handled as air cargo, and they are still going into the cargo hold of an airplane, not unlike the baggage hold. The main difference is that there's a whole list or a set of requirements that the animal has to meet and the shipment has to meet in order to be transported as cargo. And also that shipment is very carefully tracked by the airline and by the shippers. So there's a lot more certainty as to what could happen with that shipment. And so there's a lot of health issues. There's anxiety issues with the animals that have to be addressed. There's the shipping containers that have to adhere to the standards that are produced by, it's called IATA, which is the International Airline Transportation Association. And they have something called live animal regulations. And all of those regulations put out by IATA and then by the individual airline have to be met before the animal can be transported in cargo. And so there is a lot of tracking. Last part of animals traveling are probably people that are on extended vacations, maybe relocating for school, those types of things. And that's exactly where your question comes in, which is those people are typically not being supported by a relocation company. So if you work for a Google or an Apple or a Goldman Sachs, your entire move is most likely going to be handled by that company, including the animal or the pet, and they're funding it. So you don't have to worry so much. But if you're an individual, a student trying to move your animal, it can be quite costly, particularly if it's a large animal. And it can be scary because you don't really know. So I would say that we work with other shippers, other pet shippers that come to us for our services because we're right at the airport. We have relationships with the different ground handling organizations, and we can be a lot more efficient and effective in getting the animals to the cargo areas and being checked for the flight. And if something goes wrong, we have the contacts within the airport to get that animal back or rework the whole situation. And we have a kennel right there at the airport, so we can support the animals right away. It's not like an individual pet shipper that's going to drop off an animal and they don't have a kennel. So we work with pet shippers, but we also work with a lot of individuals. And I think that's kind of become a little bit of our niche, that we can support individuals that are traveling. And since we are the direct provider, it ends up being a little bit less expensive than it might be if you were to use a pet shipper who then used us, who then went through the whole process.
Let's say there's delays and right. The weather is not so great, and you're sitting there on an airplane, your animal's either in baggage or in cargo, two different, they're supposed to be the same, right? Is baggage area supposed to be temperature controlled just like cargo?
Yes. Yes. If you're putting live animals anywhere in a plane,
should be temperature.
Have to be temperature controlled. Yes.
I'd like to believe that, but I don't. So let's say there's delays. Let's say the air conditioning fails on the plane and you're sitting there for 2 hours with failure in the air conditioning and you have a flat-nosed breed
right. That
is underneath, a you know, English bulldog,
right.
Overbred, and often palate issues. What does ARC do? Do you get notification from the airline that there's a problem versus an animal that's been being transported through baggage by the actual owner?
Yeah, well, first of all, a lot of the snub-nosed breeds are restricted from traveling because of that very reason and because of the anxiety that can occur when they're trying to breathe and they can't. And the snub-nosed breeds have the most issues with adverse consequences in air travel.
Die.
Yes, yes.
Be straight and be honest.
So actually, I work with the Industry Association for Pet Transportation is called IPATA, and I work very closely with them. And they've got a whole project going on right now about brachycephalic breeds to pre-test and pre-qualify the ones that could actually travel versus the ones that aren't eligible for travel. And as you probably know, there's surgeries that can be done on some of the animals to widen their air passages. Yes. So they're looking at that because right now it's so restrictive for snub-nosed breeds to travel that it's a real challenge for an owner that doesn't want to leave a pet behind. But in the situation that you're talking about, if the just because the air conditioning might be miserable for you in the passenger area, the airline is required to keep it temperature controlled in the cargo area. If there was any failure there, the pilot has been notified that there's animals on board, and he would notice that there was this problem in the cargo hold, and then they would have to come back and the animals would be offloaded. If you were traveling and you were particularly anxious yourself, you could call a flight attendant and say, hey, my dog's in the cargo hold. I notice it's really getting hot here. What's it like down there? And she or he could notify the pilot and get you some satisfaction that your animal is being handled properly.
Yeah, there was recently a story with transport with the U.S. Army official whose dogs died.
Yes.
When this happened. And I read that, I was like, oh man. And the flight attendant apparently said the dogs were fine consistently. And there wasn't even water in the crates when they did open the crates at the end of the flight. And the animals were both dead. So when I read stories like that, and it does happen more with the brachycephalic breeds, I wonder what options people have. In New York, we have you, right? We can use your services. And you said there are, every port of entry requires this kind of service or something like this to receive animals. Are you the only one out there?
We're in the United States. Yes, we are the only one in Miami, Florida, which is another major port of entry. There's the equine side is handled pretty well, but the small animal side is not.
There's so much money in equine. You're transporting million-dollar horses. That usually, if the money's there, they're going to.
Right. And there's a lot of horses coming in and out of South America for polo. So Miami is a big port for that. There are pet shippers in Miami. We also have looked at Miami as an option. We'd really like to make sure that we're running smoothly at JFK before we expand our efforts there. In terms of LA is another port of entry, and there's a number of organizations there that can provide the support. It's just that it's not right at the airport. Atlanta has facility off airport that animals could go to. and the certain airlines will have arrangements with various kennels or organizations if they have, you know, if there is some sort of delay. I can tell you one story that might make you feel good. Swiss Airlines had a flight at one point that experienced trouble mid-flight, and they had to make an emergency landing. I'm not sure if it was actually in Canada or Minnesota or somewhere, but pretty much on an airfield that was in the middle of nowhere because of the engine trouble. They had two animals on board, dogs, and because of all the regulations and because of Swiss Air being who they are, they actually sent a transport for the two animals and picked them up and flew them back to New York to our facility to be taken care of ahead of all the passengers. So airlines are very concerned about it. They do support the pet travel. It's a challenge for them because I think everyone loves their pets just like they love their children. And the bar is so high, and with social media, the slightest thing that goes wrong can really backfire onto an airline, which is unfortunate because, you know, the more things backfire on an airline, the less opportunity there is going to be for animals to travel.
Well, yes and no. If we didn't expose, I mean, I'm not a fan of social media at all, but if the errors of people,
right,
were not exposed on social media or wherever they're being exposed now these days, I don't think the airlines would be as aggressive as they're being now. Because you go back to 2018, the numbers were through the roof with the animals dying. Delta had a bad reputation. So, I mean, you're smiling, but I find once people start talking, then these corporations start to listen. So yeah, I think it's an important thing. And of course, people carry it too far sometimes, but are there standard operating procedures with all airlines with how to handle animals, and are people properly trained in handling these animals? Now, ARC, you have a very distinct job and you're located in New York. Then everywhere else, I'm grateful that you guys are here. If I want to transport with my cats, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to go to ARC and handle it. But where else is this available?
Well, there are, so IPATA, the organization I referenced, is an organization of pet shippers who have been specifically trained to follow all of the regulations. Also, the airlines are associate members of IPATA, and so that there's communication between the pet shippers and the airlines and what are the requirements. There's also regulatory authorities that come and regularly interact with all of the pet shippers. So there's most definitely the live animal regulations that I referenced previously are out there for all airlines, regardless of who they are. Then each airline or corporation that operates the airlines may establish stricter. They can't go less, but they can go stricter than the live animal regulations, and many of them do. So the pet shippers that are specifically trained for this must be aware of not only the country that you're going to, those requirements, the IATA requirements, and then the airline's requirements. So you're frequently dealing with a lot of different regulations and looking in all sorts of different places to make sure that the shipment meets the requirements. What happens a lot of times that is often left out in many of the stories, and that's why I'm smiling, is that understandably using a pet shipper is going to increase the cost of a transport. And so a lot of people think, oh, this isn't so difficult. I'm smart. I can do it myself. And they do. And then maybe their crate wasn't compliant, or they didn't really evaluate their own animal and say, you know, is my dog or cat really fit to travel? And, you know, they're very hell bent on getting their animal from point A to point B, but they don't, you know, recognize that their animal has got anxiety issues or other issues that may prevent it, maybe too old, maybe there's an underlying health concern. And so, like, maybe your animal needs medication and you're on a 12-hour flight. Mm-hmm. So yeah, who's going to get that medication? People often misrepresent what are the situations with their animals. A really critical component of moving an animal, I believe, is getting them used to the travel container. But the first time your animal is going to be put, your dog or cat is going to be put into a, you know, a crate that's not a whole lot bigger than them, and they start going crazy. We've seen dogs actually eat right through these pretty sturdy travel crates, yeah. Or they take their claws and they try to get out and they're scratching and then they get injuries on their paws. Whose fault is that, really? When I don't want to say fault, but is
it is. The owners often wait to last minute to get their animals set up. They're busy with everything else. And I mean, I've seen it where I'd have pet owners come in like, I'm traveling today. I need a carrier for my dog. I'm like, what do you mean you're traveling today?
Yeah.
And you find out what kind of carrier. I'm like, your dog is 40 pounds.
Yeah.
It needs to go cargo. And they just look, I mean, when I had a retail store and they would just be baffled.
They think it's just routine.
Routine. And there's nothing routine about me traveling. And why would it be routine about your pet traveling and living being with your luggage? So it really baffles me how pet owners, as much information there is available online and how quick they are to react and destroy somebody for them not doing something, they don't do anything about the preparation and getting their pet to a place where they can travel easily.
I mean, we've seen situations where people took a French bulldog that was 20 plus pounds, which is over the limit for traveling in cabin. And then they put them in an overweight French bulldog. They put them in a small carrier, shoved them under the seat in front of them, didn't check on them the whole flight. And then they get to the end of the flight and the dog is deceased. And then they say, well, why did this happen? Well, you didn't have enough room for that poor animal to breathe. And
because you're an idiot. You don't have to pour out. You're an idiot.
Right.
It's your fault. And go spend another $10,000 from a puppy mill and get another brachycephalic breed that can't.
Right.
Sorry. I have no patience for humans, for the stupidity of certain humans. Talking about animals and flight, sedating. And a lot of people sedate their pets. How does that vote for transfer with your organization and just in general with flying with pets?
Well, we always recommend not sedating because it lowers the respiration and the heart rate. And when you're up in the air, even though the cargo area is pressurized and temperature controlled, it's not the same kind of air that we're breathing down here. And so it's really not safe for the animal, particularly if it's the snub-nosed breeds or an older dog or cat. I would say there are exceptions or other options. I'm sure you're familiar with Adaptil. Then there's other herbal types of things that can calm the animals. I work with a company called Zounds Music for Pets. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Definitely.
And we use their music in our kennel, and we encourage owners to basically crate train with the music. So now that animal's been soothed by the music, they know that the crate is a happy place where there's music usually. They come to our facility, they get more music. We transport them in a van that has the music playing. So it makes for a much better opportunity for the animals. There are, we always urge people to confer with their veterinarian as to really what are the risks and rewards of using medication. I know a lot of people who travel with their pets in cabin sedate them because they're concerned that animal's going to go crazy in the little tiny soft side travel container. And, that's the responsibility of the owner at that point, but we just urge everyone to use caution on it.
Yeah. Cats versus dogs. I think cats are minimized in travel.
Yes.
Dogs aren't. Can we talk about the differences of what you would do versus what's being done?
Well, cats, it seems like there's more extremes with the cats. Dogs, I don't want to say they're always in this kind of range, but cats, you can get everything from completely crazy and upset and nervous and scratching and trying to get out. And then you get the other extreme where they're just the most amazing, settled, and you know, no problem.
Or they're just so frightened that they seem like they're amazing, but they're kind of and they don't want anyone to come near them.
But the ones that we see that are very calm, I mean, you can tell because they're not going to be handled by just anybody. And we have a number of our handlers in the kennel that are real cat people. And we always make sure if we have a larger cat shipment, like a rescue shipment that comes in, that they're on duty for them, because it's a real gift to have that relationship with the cats. I think the biggest issue with cats is that they're a lot more squirrely. They can escape in 2 seconds. Again, one of the reasons to use a pet shipper, to use someone that's experienced in this, is that when you check if you're doing a move on your own with your cat, you have to go to the cargo area, and often they make you take the animal out of the crate because they have to inspect the crate, one, to make sure there's no dangerous goods in it, that, you know, batteries or anything that could explode, but also to make sure that the cat is properly sized for the crate, or the dog. It happens for all animals. You take a cat out of a crate in the middle of a busy cargo facility, it'll run. Mm-hmm. And that's where you hear so many stories of the cats escaping, and they're running around in an airport and up in the ceilings or something like that. So when we have cats, we will work with the cargo facility and say, hey, we're not going to take this cat out. Also, we're qualified as a cargo screening facility, a certified cargo screening facility. So we do that inspection in our facility in an enclosed area before we bring the animal to the cargo area. So we don't have to take the cat out. So, you know, I think that cats, like dogs, will ultimately settle down once they get up into the, you know, once the flight is gone. It's just kind of the handling and the being gentle and calm pre and post flight, which is really critical.
It's definitely critical. It's definitely critical. And I really think cats are just ignored in every capacity, my opinion. And dogs are mishandled. That's how I see the world. If you need to travel internationally, are there different rules for international travel with pets, or is it consistent across the board around the world?
No, it's not consistent at all. Okay. Why would it be, right?
Well, nothing is ever consistent. I mean, if it was, it would make life a lot easier.
Right. So, yes, there's a wide variation. And kind of sadly, the United States is lagging behind most other first world countries in terms of its requirements. But before you travel, anyone were to travel internationally, it's absolutely critical that you review, or that you have a person that's moving your pet, review the requirements for entry into another country. And if you look at, like, well, even Hawaii within the United States, or any other kind of island country like Australia, New Zealand, those states, for lack of a better term, have less diseases, or have very certain disease, and they want to prevent any additional diseases from coming into that world. So they tend to be the most restrictive in terms of requirements, and they require testing, pre-quarantine, tighter and more testing, vaccinations, and a lot of health, and the health certificates have to reflect that all of these things have been done in a particular order. And Australia right now, I think, is approximately a year. So if you were to move to Australia, you would have to start planning your pet's move a year in advance.
What does that mean, planning?
They have one single quarantine facility for entry into Australia, and you have to get a reservation there. And the reservations are backed up 6 to 8 months right now. On top of that, they have very strict requirements about pre-quarantining before you even leave the country. You have to have all the different vaccinations. The microchip has to be done at a certain point. And then you submit this package to make your reservation with the Australian quarantine facility. They can give you a date. And often you have to leave an animal, pre-quarantine it before. And like, if you got transferred, it's not, you don't usually have a year notice to be transferred.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. So those are the most restrictive countries. But like South Africa is very restrictive.
Is that because of zoonotic diseases, or, I mean,
both zoonotic and agricultural issues. Okay. Europe is pretty straightforward. You just have to pay attention to the specific rules of the country that you're entering. And then you get into the Asian countries, which can vary. Hong Kong is restrictive, but and then China, we don't see a whole lot going to China. We see more things coming in from China than
more things domestic animals or exotics
from. I'm sorry,
from China.
China is mostly rescue dogs. We see
from the meat markets or I don't know. I'm just guessing.
That's what they say they are.
Oh God, what's wrong with us as people?
I don't know what's that. There's so much wrong with a lot of the things that go on that I can't.
Talking about what's wrong, clearly all the rules are different from country to country. I assume the Middle East has its own set of issues and standards. It's funny, my aunt wants to come here. She lives in Iran and she's thinking about coming back to the US. And she said, figure out how I can get my cats here. And I said, oh, okay. I don't know how we're going to do that. They have zero respect for animals in Iran. So the transport of pets from there to here, I get scared. Well, anything coming out of Iran and going to Iran, I get scared. So,
that's one area where cats have it better than dogs.
They're so abused.
There's really much fewer restrictions for cats than for dogs to come into the United States.
Really?
Yes.
Great. She can bring all her nine cats here. Line them up and very kind.
Line them up, yeah.
Yeah. So talking about international travel and transporting pets, what about scams and people that are doing anything for a buck? Tell me, is that prevalent in your industry?
Yes. Well, if you want to start with the puppy situation, and regardless of maybe your feelings or what has happened here in the United States, certainly there's been a lot of abuses in puppy mills here in the US, but at least there are regulations and you kind of know what you're getting. And so there's been really a huge reduction in the number of breeders and even cottage breeders or home breeders because of the repercussions that and prosecution that they've faced either by the US like cities and states or PETA or Humane Society that kind of attack that, which has made it really much more difficult for the average person to purchase or to get a pet. And
online, you mean? So they're
online, or even like there's fewer pet stores. A lot of pet stores have been closed down.
Hallelujah.
Breeders have been shut down. So you have increasing demand for pets, and then you have decreased supply. So what happens? The price has gone up. I mean, I don't think you can buy really a purebred dog for less than $3,000 right now. In many cases.
You can from the reputable breeders who will take them back. But I just interviewed John Goodwin from the Stop Puppy Mill campaign.
Right.
And we talked about this. I mean, there is so many commercial breeders all over, and they're shipping animals all over the country. How well they're shipping them, that's something.
The ones in the United States tend to use organizations that kind of facilitate that. And for the most part, they're checked out. I haven't seen too many abuses. The abuses that are occurring are the ones coming from, until recently, we saw Russia, the Eastern Europe countries, and they were falsifying all the health records. The dogs, even China, the dogs are arriving. They've been in horrific, you can tell. The dogs don't even know how to walk because they've been shoved into this thing. And then people are going, what's happening is you or me or somebody goes online and doesn't know this. They type in, I want to buy a French bulldog. And they find a website. It looks like it's based in the United States. And perhaps the person that's going to actually be selling them the dog is based in the United States. But what they're doing is they're importing from these other countries the dogs are in far worse condition than anything that would have existed here in the United States. And you don't know if they falsify their health records. So you don't know if they've got zoonotic diseases. They certainly have behavioral issues because they've been mistreated. And then you shove them into a small crate and you shipped them for 12 or 15 hours. What are people expecting? I've worked with a number of, I would say, Long Island based or US based, and I hate to call them rescues, but shelters and things. And they're telling me that often these dogs get adopted or purchased and then they get returned to them. And then their shelters are overflowing with dogs that have been rejected, and then they have to be retrained and rehomed, hopefully. You know, we've seen cats come in with diseases. I would far prefer to see things in the United States where they're done properly and regulated properly, and people are purchasing directly from there. But we do put on our website and iPod website a lot about puppy scams. And if you're just going online to purchase a dog, you really have to do your research and make sure that that dog is coming from the United States. Unless you've made a conscious decision to specifically rescue a dog from China or someplace else, you want to know what you're getting. And it's becoming more and more difficult to, you know, you can't even go and visit some of these breeders because they might be in California and we're in New York or in Colorado or in Pennsylvania. Well,
they have brokers who are setting everything up and making claims that are inaccurate. They're lying. So these are the scams you're talking about. These brokers who are shipping animals because it's incredibly cheap. Yeah. They're going to be euthanized anyway, or they will die where they are, whether it's in Romania or in China or South America.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen so many Frenchies come from Romania with just distorted bodies, and people are purchasing them, and then they wind up being put to death here. Right. So these scams, they're fronting themselves as rescues, right? I mean, they're
sometimes rescues, or sometimes they're saying that they're breeders and they're offering a lower price than you could purchase that same dog for legitimately in the United States. So, but we do see, I mean, I've seen rescues from China where the dogs are, these are not street meat. These are purebred, you know, home pets. And I don't know how they've been picked up, or I've heard a number of stories, but I'm not sure I believe all of them. But these are people's pets, and they get brought back to the United States and then rehomed. It's just, and they're selling their adoption fee is $5,000. So tell me that's a rescue that's just doing good. I don't believe it for a second.
I know, and it's unfortunate the buyers are very much at fault for this problem continuing. So how does the USDA, APADA, how do these organizations stop the import of these animals? How do you stop this from happening?
Well, we work with the three main regulatory bodies that we work with are CDC, Center for Disease Control, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Customs and Border Protection. The regulations are not consistent even between U.S. Department of Agriculture and CDC, but they are trying to work together to improve that. What CDC has done recently in the last few years since COVID, there's been new rules that have been put into effect that basically say it's not affecting cats, it affects dogs. Dogs that are coming from high-risk rabies countries, and you can go online, I think there's almost 140 different countries, maybe more now, that are considered high-risk rabies countries. If they're coming from one of those countries, they have to, you know, have to have had the vaccination, they have to have had a titer test, or they have to come into the United States and be quarantined for 28 days, or be revaccinated and quarantined once they get into the United States. And there's five facilities now, of which we are one. We were the pilot program for CDC. So although it's only really focused on one disease, rabies, it's kind of that disease is a proxy in a way for all of the other things that could be happening in those countries. So it has really reduced the number of animals coming from those countries and increased the health prospects of those puppies. Although we still see things that are not quite legitimate. But in those cases, you know, the dog has to be at least 6 months old. So you don't see these little puppies coming in that have been taken away from their mother too soon. They have to have had the rabies vaccine. They have to, and then they have the whole USDA requirements for vaccinations. So that's improved the health of those animals coming from those higher risk countries. Customs works with CDC. They have an arrangement between the two regulatory bodies, and they're like the enforcement arm for CDC. So if they see a large shipment of animals coming in, they'll contact CDC and warn them and stop the animals, question the individual bringing them in. There's also been restriction for how many animals can come in the passenger environment without being considered a commercial shipment, which would then force it to go into cargo and force it to be subject to much greater regulations. So we used to see things like rescues coming in from the Middle East with 50 dogs checked as excess baggage by one person.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, what, no one was even expecting it because it's not manifested cargo. So it doesn't say live animals on it. So they show up and those animals were a mess. So that's not allowed anymore. So there's been, and there has been greater enforcement pushing back on the owner or the shipper that makes you're the responsible party. So if CDC rejects the shipment, you have to pay for those animals to go back to the point of origin. Also, there's been some.
Oh my God, what those animals go through.
I know, it's terrible. That's why everybody you want to make sure that it's done right, so there isn't this risk of happening. There's also been greater enforcement with the airlines that CDC has put the airlines on notice to say, hey, you're responsible for making sure these shipments are legitimate. You should not accept for shipment any animal that doesn't meet all of the live animal regulations, that doesn't have the appropriate import certificates, et cetera, et cetera. And so if those animals become abandoned, the airline then becomes responsible for whatever happens, you know, bringing them back to the point of origin. That doesn't typically happen very frequently, obviously, but there is often a lot of pushing and shoving as to who's the financially responsible party. Fortunately, at JFK, there's our facility, so animals will get transferred to us. But if I'm sure you've read articles like in Chicago and some other places where there wasn't a kennel facility, the animals just sat in a cargo area for 2 days.
Yeah. Instead of even being taken to the municipal shelter.
Right. But they can't take it to the municipal shelter because the municipal shelter doesn't have the disease control. So it's all about, you know, is that cargo cleared by customs? It's unclear. It's considered bonded cargo. So it's a lot more complicated than one would imagine. So you know, the biggest thing is to prevent it from happening in the first place.
I really think that the USDA needs to get out of anything having to do with living animals. And we have an organization just that handles only animal adoption, breeding, oversight, transport, and no lobbyists should have their hands in this process because there's a lot of money to be made in the industry.
Oh, yes. And
these scams exist because of the, you know, the
balls.
I mean, I feel like it's the mafia world. You know? There's the animal world mafia, and we don't hear the suffering because we choose to be blind as consumers and pet lovers. With the holidays coming up, travel, holidays, people want to take their pets for Thanksgiving so families can all be together. What do you say to that? Give us some advice here.
I know that selfishly, we all want to be with our pets and we're attached to them. But if you have a very anxious animal, pet, don't travel with it. Find someone that you know that will give it a good home for a week or 4 days and don't put your animal through that. Even you know, bringing in a smaller animal in the passenger environment, because of the way the seat selections work, you could end up with a cat next to a dog and they can smell each other. They can, you know, then the owners are upset and then you can have all sorts of problems then you go, you know, if you want to do the excess baggage thing, just make sure you've got a really, really calm animal that's acclimated to travel. Some people travel with their pets all the time and they're fine, but others not. Really consider who your animal, who your pet is. What is their temperament? Are they really, really set up to travel? And is it best for them and not just for you?
If somebody wants to use your services at ARC to transport their pet, what does it cost? And is it by weight? What is the cost? Because we spoke about this briefly at the beginning. Is this something that's affordable to your average person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It really varies. And until I got into this world, I didn't understand it. The cost variance is primarily based on the size of the crate and the weight of the dog. So there's volume of the crate and then the overall weight of the shipment. So on a smaller animal, it can be just a few hundred dollars, that what we would call a 300 kennel or smaller. Those are fairly affordable. When you get into the large species, you're up into the thousands of dollars. And then each airline is very different in terms of their cargo rates, depending on how they, you know, where is their specialties in terms of shipments. And so they may price their cargo, their per kilo rate for cargo for live animals higher. You know, there's a huge variation among the airlines. And often you're restricted by which airline you can use because you don't want to have a stop. I mean, you want a direct flight if at all possible. That's number one, that you don't want to have your animal having to go through being unloaded and then reloaded onto an airplane, another airplane. So routing is a big consideration. So that can end up costing you more. Then also, there's many times where, like, if you're flying, JetBlue, for example, only allows animals in cabin, not in cargo and not in excess baggage. So let's say you booked your flight on JetBlue and now you decide you want to take your dog or cat with you. That means by definition, that animal's traveling on another airline. So what happens if your flight is delayed or that flight's delayed and it just opens so many opportunities for error and problems that can happen. Another thing is, even if you are on an airline that takes animals, it might be the plane itself doesn't have the temperature control in the cargo hold, which again would necessitate your animal being on a separate flight from you. So,
does the airline tell the pet owner that? Or
yes, they will. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but I think people wait, like as you said, like you see last how many minute. People come in late to the last minute, and then they go and they're saying, oh my God, I can't do this. And I mean, we see crying people at our offices all the time, like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? So really,
what do they do? Can they keep their pets at your facility?
Yeah, we've seen that where they leave them with us for, if it's a shorter time, that's what has to happen. Sometimes we can rebook them on another flight for them. But always when it's last minute like that, it's never your optimal situation. Really having, the other thing that's really important is your veterinarian. And you may have a veterinarian that you love and is really great with your animal, but that might not be a USDA certified veterinarian. And only a USDA certified veterinarian can do the health certificates and the fit to fly certificates that are required for travel. So people don't understand that. And they go to their veterinarian and say, well, and they may not know. So having a veterinarian that understands the certifications necessary for the animals to fly is really critical.
Do the vets in general understand that? You know, if I go to my vet and say, hey, I'm going to be traveling with my pup.
No, I think most do not. I'm trying to remember what the statistic is. It's not the majority. I think it's maybe 25% of veterinarians are USDA certified. It may be even less. So for the most part, your local vet is most likely not USDA certified. They don't have access to the VHICS, which is the health certificate system. And even if they are USDA certified and they only do one a year, they may fill out that form incorrectly. And then you get to the airport and it gets rejected. So making sure that you have a veterinarian that really understands the different requirements. And it's like human doctors, right? You know, the veterinarian is there for your 15 or 20 minute appointment. They hand off all of the paperwork to an assistant or a vet tech who may or may not have the information. And we try to work with people's vets all the times, and getting most of them are practices with multiple veterinarians, getting the person online that can answer a question or that can fix a form for us is a real challenge. So that's a lot of what we do. At our facility, we do have a USDA certified vet that's done thousands of these certificates. So I think we have one of the highest approval rates of vet export certificates in the United States, just because we do so many of them.
And do you have any kind of veterinary referral outline on your website? If people do want to travel, they can see who the USDA vets are, or is there somewhere they can go to look and find someone who's certified?
On the USDA website, they do have USDA certified vets. Typically, if someone's within the tri-state area near our facility, we would recommend that they use our veterinarian come in. It might take a little bit extra time, but in the long run, a lot of the veterinarians are still mailing the health certificates to the USDA. So the turnaround time could be a week, which is slow. We usually get it done in a day. Mm-hmm. So it's worthwhile for people to take the extra step to utilize the veterinarian at our facility. We don't require it by any means, but if someone is using their own veterinarian, we need to review the documents in advance.
Anything else they should know before they decide to take their pets with them? Or are we in a good place to plan in advance?
Yeah, acclimating animals to travel, to the pet travel crates, understanding your animal. Those are the two biggest things that I would say, making sure there's not any health issues that could complicate their travel. I think overall, if you really look at the incident reports, it's really a very, very small number of animals that are injured or die during travel. It's just that when they do happen, of course, it's splashed all over the place. So I think overall, it is very safe, and people shouldn't be terribly, terribly concerned about it. It's just that it's like anything else. It's a big unknown, and there's this, you see your dog or cat when you drop it off, and when you pick them up, and there's this big thing in the middle that you don't really know what's happening, and it's anxiety provoking. I know, sadly, my dog passed away last year, and I would never put him in the cargo hold because he was just too anxious. He was not that kind of dog. And this is what I do for a living, but I would never, ever have put him in there. He just couldn't, he would have had a heart attack.
Right. Yeah, no, I'd rather drive across country than put him out on a plane.
Right.
I saw on your website, the crates that you have are all covered with netting. Was it on... Yeah, there was netting. It was a video on your site.
Oh, that might have been a rescue. So that's when they're coming on a pallet. So a large shipment of rescue. Well, they can't mix species. Right. So you can't have dogs and cats. But in a large shipment like that, the airline will put the crates onto a pallet and then put a netting over it so that the pallets so that the crates can't shift or anything. There are very strict requirements about breathing areas between so the crates themselves have to have openings on mm-hmm. four sides, and they have to be spaced out. And so if you put two crates together, there's usually a spacer between them to ensure that there's adequate breathing room. Obviously, we would prefer that animals don't be put on a pallet, but it is for weights and balances purposes on the aircraft, they have to do it. So we do that. And then one of the things we do is on those large shipments, we work with the airline. We go directly to the aircraft. We get those animals off just as fast as possible. We get the netting off and we unload them. As I said earlier, we don't really do the transport. We're more of a facilitator or coordinator on some of those specialty shipments, because those require a lot of outside the airport personnel staff to assist. So this is where you get into national security. You know, access to the airfield, the AOA, is very restricted by the Department of Homeland Security and TSA. And so we work with the organizations that are doing the transporting to make sure anybody that's being allowed under the aircraft or with those animals are appropriately vetted from a security perspective.
What do you want the people who want to not only travel with their pets, but to understand what is available for them, at least in New York? What would you like them to know?
Well, like I said, know your pet. Number one, know your pet. I can't emphasize it enough. And two, know that it is, at the end of the day, it's a lot safer than you might think. And three is, if you do need assistance, you can actually go on our website or email us at info@arcjfk.com, and we will endeavor to answer your questions and provide any assistance that we can. I know I love my pets and I hate to be without them, but I also want what's best for the animals, and what's, you know, the welfare of the animals is really primary.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just get a pet sitter, please.
Yes. And our facility is very state of the art. We keep everything very clean, and we have very strict cleaning and disinfection protocols. We've not had outbreaks of diseases that can happen in typical kennels. Any animal that's in our facility, whether it's for a few hours or for a few days, they're really handled very well. There's all sorts of, our Instagram has all sorts of cute little videos on the handlers playing with the animals. We take them outside, they get plenty of attention. So at least within our world, we control it as much as possible.
Yeah, you even have noise control. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I could imagine the stress caused by the vibration and the sound from the airplane. So the fact that you have the noise control and the music, that yes. I love. Yeah. We should all use music for our pets.
Yes, sounds is an excellent option for everyone, both in their home and any place else.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Jazz. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you.